I opened TikTok to look for this.
So it was a risky move to open TikTok.
I was like, damn, some heavy metal.
Yeah. I know.
Pull the lever, Gronk.
Okay. Hey guys, welcome back to Book Talk Me and Me, the podcast where we're talking about all your favorite books from Book Talk, Bookstagram, wherever you're going to get to a book, we're going to talk about it.
And probably spoil it.
Oh. Okay, we'll get into that. We'll unpack that comment in a second. But to get over the formalities, I'm Caitlin. We've got our co-hosts, Bridget and Hilda here.
Hello.
Hi.
Hilda's trying to make sure she's heard the recording. Yeah, picks up her. Hi. Not
filtered out in post-production.
So to unpack Hilda's comment, we just want to go ahead and say on the record, when we do our book recaps, we're assuming you're cool, you're listening, because you've either read the book or you're cool with being spoiled by the contents of the book, which we're going to describe. Like, you haven't read it, but you're cool to know what happened. So just want to go ahead and issue some spoiler warnings, lest we forget. If you're midway reading this book and don't want to be spoiled, then maybe don't come to some of these episodes until you're finished. Just like in general, like a general book talk announcement. Book Talk Made Me podcast announcement. Please don't listen unless you've read the whole book. We'll just say that. And that's just kind of some friendly love that we receive, some friendly feedback. Were they?
I wouldn't call it friendly when it's a 1-star review, but.
Damn.
I say we learn from our feedback and we grow, which is why I say just, friendly spoiler warning. Just in general, a general note, housekeeping, if you will.
Yeah, spring has sprung, bitches. So, let's get shit in order.
Yeah. On that note, we are covering a book called Lady of Darkness by Melissa Rorick. Did I say that right?
I don't know.
You're the audiobook one today.
I didn't look to see. I was like, I'll look and check. Well, I'm going to go with Rorick. By Melissa Rorick. And this was recommended to us, right?
Yes. Everybody and their mothers had recommended this to us.
There's some people that I found in our DMs at the bottom of the list.
Okay. So we'll give you a shout out as we call you out. But y'all, actually, you know what? We'll just do this now. So this was recommended to us, by everyone and their mother, basically. And on everyone on TikTok had been talking about it. But specifically from our DMs, Sierra, Lakeisha, and Corey all recommended Lady of Darkness to us. So you asked, we answered. And Hilda's going to run through this book with us. Now, I do think we need to address some controversy around this book first. Hilda, you want to take us through that?
Yeah. So we got the recommendations from a couple of people. And so we started looking into the book. And we ran into a pretty popular content creator on TikTok who basically published this long video essentially calling the book plagiarism. And I was like, oh, that's...
Shots fired. That's...
I was like, that's a pretty big claim. So we kind of ended up putting the book on the back burner. But then I reached out to our friend Renee, friend of the podcast Renee, and I was like, hey, have you read the series? We saw that somebody was accusing her of plagiarism. And she was like, no, I don't think so. And so definitely, trust Renee's opinion. As I've been reading it, and again, only one book in, are there some similar themes? Yes. But it's not like SJM has a copyright patent on, an inner circle and funny / disrespectful friends. You know what I mean? So I...
Yeah. And I think the controversy surrounded that this book or this series borrowed very similar themes from SJM works. So not necessarily all from one book, but kind of like her breadth of work.
But I think that's...
I wouldn't even say it's themes, because a lot of books have reoccurring themes because those are the tropes that we usually talk about. I think it was more the concepting that she was able to borrow. But I've noticed even some descriptions were very that is literally Valaris when she had described it. Mm-hmm. And so I can see where the original content creator had made that stretch. I haven't finished the series, so I'm not going to make a formal opinion about it one way or another. But it goes into a debate whether is any art ever truly new, or is it all just kind of inspired by other art that they saw before.
Right.
Yeah.
And I would say I was probably almost halfway through this book before I asked you guys, I'm like, is this the book that people said was plagiarized? Because there were some themes I was picking up on that I could start to see. I was making the connections all on my own, completely forgetting that this book was that the one of that noted controversy.
I mean, are there some things that are similar? Yeah, but I feel like for somebody to make a video calling out an author and being like, this is plagiarism. And, you know, I'm vaguely remembering the video, but I feel like she was very much like, this was directly copied. This was directly copied.
Yeah, it was a pretty intense video.
And then to then read this and just be like, okay, well, I mean, there's some connection, but like, I don't
even think the original video is still up because I did just go look it up really quickly. Mm-hmm. And I saw like response videos. But I didn't see the actual, like, when I clicked on.
She might have taken it down because, I feel like her video was really harsh.
Really accusatory, too.
But after reading this, like, book one so far, I'm just kind of like, I mean, there's some stuff that's similar. But again, it's not like she owns those ideas and then she copied them.
As so, I said in my final thoughts and notes, I vibed with it. But again, it's probably because I vibed with her source material. So. And, maybe, you know, that's why I enjoyed it so much. It
couldn't have been plagiarism. Scarlett can read. Farah does not.
I mean, there's the one notable difference.
Right. Anyways.
So before we get any further in this book, want to go ahead again and issue spoiler warnings. If you're reading it halfway through, wait till you finish reading and then come back so we don't accidentally spoil anything. As we said at the top of the show, come to listen to this episode after you have read or if you're okay with being spoiled. Now, we've only read the first book in the series, so we won't be spoiling ahead because we haven't read ahead yet. So I guess don't spoil us in the DMs if you've read ahead. With that, Hilda, let's turn it over to you.
Okay. So of course, you know, we need to start with the overdramatic, dramatic book synopsis. Ladies, please mute yourselves.
It's like, I'm already done. Already there. I'm already there.
Shadows always return to the darkness. A cage. Owned by a ruthless assassin lord, Scarlett Monroe, which, by the way, she has a random H in her last name, but whatever, and her two sisters have been trained since they were children to torture and take life. They are the most feared trio on the continent, but they are also wild and unpredictable. A tragic night has Scarlett finding herself locked away in a noble's household, trapped and forgotten, until she's ready to fall into line. A choice. Until the day she is presented with a job. If she completes the assignment, her payment will be something she has coveted for 10 years. Revenge against the Fey Fire Prince, who brutally killed her mother 10 years ago. Is she willing to sacrifice her ideals for retribution? A mystery. But when children begin disappearing from her home, all her plans are put on hold as she races to save the most innocent, with the help of old friends, a jilted lover, and a mysterious newcomer who claims the magic of the Fae is possible in the mortal lands. Scarlett delves into the darkest corners of the world. Forgotten secrets will come to light, and she will discover the darkness extends far beyond her own kingdom. Dun dun dun.
Snaps. Well done. Snaps. I don't want to actually snap the microphone, but snaps.
Bridget almost spit out her water.
I did.
I think it was a cage. That's dramatic. It was great.
That was a really long.
It was.
Synopsis, just want to say.
It was. But let's talk about what we got in the book as we took you through the overdramatic, dramatic book synopsis, but this one started off with a map, I believe, and again, pronunciation guide.
We got a map, a pronunciation guide, and some like definitions of things, which super helpful. So thank you, Melissa. Oh. Clearly not plagiarized from SJM because she never provides. Well, no, she provides maps, but not a pronunciation guide.
She does it at the end.
She does it at the end, yeah.
Yeah, which I always feel like, man, I just made it through 1,000 pages of calling this man a different name. You did not set me up for success. Let's get into thoughts and feelings before we dabble into the darkness of this lady, because she's a lady of darkness.
Solid. I'll jump off really quickly because, or jump in really quickly because I feel like my thoughts are there, but not really there. Reading this, I felt like I was into it, but I was also very confused at certain points. I just could not keep track of the background, the storyline. I was like, okay, but what's going on with this one random thing that they mentioned several times at the beginning of the book, and then nobody talked about it. And that, I just kept questioning everything. And then there was a part about a war, but I still have no clue why the war happened or who it started or really who was against who. I'm just very, and I finished that book and I'm still very confused about that. So did not love that. But did I finish this book and immediately download the second one so I can read the few chapters before going to bed? I did. Like, the ending got me. It got me to click through to Amazon and download the second book. So that was cool. Also, why are all men the same? Like, I was yelling at this dude from my Kindle telling him to, like, say something. Tell her whatever you're hiding. And you knew what was going to happen.
Is that classic miscommunication trope?
Is that bad character development, or is it just a deliberate plot point? But if it's a deliberate plot point, it annoys the shit out of all of us.
I think it's accurate character development because men are stupid.
They really are. They really are.
Them's the facts.
But with all that being said, I put down the book number two, after like a few chapters to make sure, you know, the group was still good-ish and fine and things weren't crazy. I already forgot what this book was about. I have zero attachments to the characters and I felt their personalities were a bit lacking.
Interesting. Yeah. My note was immediately yes. When we started off, I was like, oh, hell yes, this is good. We got our assassin. Maybe I just love an assassin lady, you know? But I was immediately into it. There was no like cold warm up. It started off strong. I was like, we got these three badass assassins going to take out this man who is terrified of them. I'm all in. Like, first chapter was like, I'm all in. Tell me everything I need to know. And I feel like it didn't disappoint as we got further. The plot progressed in a way that made sense in a timely fashion. Now, am I also confused about things? Yes, because Hilda texted us yesterday, hey, who are the Avalaeans? And I was like, I don't know. I was hoping you could explain this to me, because this is one of those moments where I kept thinking, oh yeah, that kind of makes sense. I'm just going to truck on through and see if I can figure it out later. And I didn't figure it out later. I don't really understand.
Feel like there was one part towards the end of the book where Soren describes or like rehashes the history to her, because, you know, when there's two people on opposing sides, they have different versions. And even that, I was like, I just highlighted it as I was reading. So I was like, I need to come back to this to digest this another time, because it's not happening right now. Because I have no clue what he said.
I think it's purposely confusing because I've gotten to certain part in part two where they go back and explain things. So the fact that we're all confused, I think, is almost, if it's not on purpose, it's because it was not well done and not like well explained, and not because we're dumb and have poor reading comprehension.
I mean, I feel like I'm dumb and have poor reading comprehension and pronunciation.
That's always my first fear. I'm like, am I stupid? Do I still have COVID brain? Like, why is this not clicking? Like, I don't understand what's going on. Also, the names don't gel.
Okay, explain, because I had the audiobook of this. So I was, having not seen the print, like the words, how they were spelled, it didn't bother me, but I could see how reading it, it was jarring to me.
Windanel? I don't know. I feel like in some cases, like, these are just like sounds that were put together. Baeloran.
See, that one makes sense to me.
It felt like she took certain words and just added more consonants and vowels to it to make something fresh and new. And I was like, you're doing too much.
Yeah. Like, even like Avonlea, that's Avonlea.
That one's tough.
That's Avonlea, but with like a Y stuck in it.
Yeah.
And I was like, is this a shout out to like Anna Green Gables?
Oh, I did used to love that.
You know? So anyways, just, I do kind of, when I go through the background, kind of talk about these things and our confusion, because it is confusing.
A little bit confusing, but again, here for the ride, because I thoroughly enjoyed this book. Now, there was a part that I got to, you know, as you're reading through, is there assassin? Yes. And immediately I'm like, oh, it's kind of like assassins, like a little Selena Sardathian. Sardathian?
Sardothian.
Selena Sardothian. And she's kind of got her like assassin badass friends. I loved it. And then, and that reminded me a little bit of a book I don't think you guys read, but it was The Bridge Kingdom, where someone's a trained assassin. And it kind of reminded me a little bit of that. So I'm like, oh, I like this. It's all my little character women tropes that I'm vibing with. But when I got to 41%, there was a specific part where Soren is in his apartment and they're talking about how his favorite place was the artist corridor. He liked to overlook with the river. And immediately my brain was like, okay, you couldn't have picked like another corridor because that is Velaris. That
you just it was described. Like so word it was, for word when he described it, immediately my head went,
yes.
Oh, you have the residential side. You have the commercial side where, or, you know, the shopping area. And then if you get further down, you end up in the artist's quarter. And I was like, bro, this is where I understood where the girl was talking about. Cause I said, we could have done something different here. Exactly. I thought that was just lazy.
I thought that's exactly where I've texted you guys to say, wait a minute, because now we're not just pulling on the same things that I like. Like that was, I felt very much lifted from that. I'm like, it would have been very easy to just call it a musician's corner. Like I get the cities are all kind of laid out. There's a financial district. There's Midtown. Like that's just kind of the way cities are. But
it also felt like an unnecessary
addition,
snippet of information.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't descriptive enough for us to get a visual of others. So our minds, I feel like, immediately went to something that we have seen before because it was such a close, bare description of what SJM has described Velaris as.
But also there's like not really any action taking place there.
Right. So it was just like a throwaway line. So I thought that was very like, what was the point of that? But then also, since we're on this topic about her, the whole, she plays a piano.
Yeah, that's where you texted.
And I was like, did Celine also, what is her name? God.
Selena.
Selena also play the piano? She did something in the theater and I Googled it and then Google told me it was the piano as well, but I don't remember for sure.
Oh, she did love theater.
I couldn't put my finger on what book, but I'm like, I have read this part before where there's like a distraught person who's like, let me play. I have to play the music. And I just, the theme was ringing a bell to something like recent.
Farah and her painting. I feel like it also like it reminded me of like Bryce and her dancing.
Which is cool because like those are all things like I get that. But the fact that we're talking about an assassin who is of royalty, who grew up poor and in the slums and gets adopted by a assassin lord. And, you know, she has picked up this fine art or a instrument, which is the piano, which is something we have previously read. Like, you could have come up with a different instrument. For fuck's sakes, make her play the violin. I don't care. Just pick something else.
You know what? The tuba. You know, that would have been an interesting plot twist. Like
the trumpet. I don't care.
Can you imagine? That was like part of her assassin weaponry. She was like, let me play this tune real quick. Whips out her tuba and then like a dart gets you. You know, that would have been great. Who would have seen that coming?
Jesus. See, now that is creative, Caitlin. Thank you. I don't know if the author was in that level of creativity.
I'm available for consulting, Melissa, if you need to spice things up. Can you imagine dramatic tuba playing? I'm just cracking myself up. I need to play.
The visual on this one, the visual is fantastic.
Now, speaking of things that I laughed, Hilda, one of your notes was around the use of a character nickname. So please explain, because you ruined the rest of that book for me.
You did for me as well.
Okay. So Cassius, we'll learn who he is, calls Scarlet Sea Star, which I think is such a random.
It really is. Like, it's not a nickname. It just flows off the tongue.
I thought it was so cute because I was like, oh, that's different. That's different. She's a sea star. And then I read your note and I said, oh, shit.
And then I'm like, wait, is it Sea Star or Sea Star? And the thing is, so like, I call one of my sisters. I'm always like, hello, sister. And I always make a funny voice when I talk to her. And so in my head whenever I saw that nickname. I was like, Seester. So is it Seester or Seester?
Exactly the weird voice you would do it into, because just based on the way you wrote it, Seester. Like, hello, Seester. It was just so funny.
So sorry. But yeah, it was a different nickname.
One difference.
One. Scarlet's 19.
Which I hated.
I hate that too.
If I can be honest.
It explains her lack of maturity, but also I really need some adult heroines.
I agree, but
I'm tired of these 19-year-olds.
The girls are 19 and the guys are just as immature and they're supposed to be like 100, 200 years old. Like, what the fuck?
Ancient. I mean, that tracks though, because men are stupid.
I can't.
But I'm getting tired of the teenage heroine who clearly is more mature than your typical 19-year-old, but also annoyingly immature. If that makes sense.
I agree.
We can call that the dichotomy of the heroine.
I was actually really – I thought she was more mature. I thought we're getting like a mid-20s heroine who has seen some things, lived her life a little bit, yeah, and experienced things. 19 I feel like, just feels a little baby to me.
I feel like someone in her late 20s can still be traumatized by the untimely death of her mother. It's not just teenagers.
20s, I think anybody at any age will be traumatized by that.
So.
And not just traumatized by that, but traumatized by her, what has happened in like any of the things that she experienced would be traumatizing.
Yeah.
So we can be late 20s, early 30s, still handling our shit and looking good. It's like, why are we going to make ourselves 19? So I was really mad because I thought she was much older. I thought her maturity level was – the way she presented, I thought, was a little bit more sophisticated. Not sophisticated, but, older. She presented herself a little bit older, not like a whiny 19-year-old. Not that Feyre did either, and she was a youngin as well, but still.
I feel like they almost, like, aged them down in the books to, like, 19. So if they make very stupid, annoying decisions for the plot, we can have that as like, oh, she's just 19. She's like, she's still like, mature.
Listen, as a millennial, we all still making stupid decisions.
Yeah, every single day in my life.
That's why I think we can now start just like minimum 21.
Yeah,
21. What do you mean
that? 25.
Like, why does
– at least you can still be old but get a discount on your car insurance.
Yeah, let's go with 25, sure.
I was going to say, I like 20, 27, 28. Feels good to me.
No, those are great ages. I'm saying if you're going to make them super young, like I think 21.
Yeah.
Like the youngest.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Hear us now, Book Talk. We, all future authors, I mean, I know this is a complete series, so this isn't going to come to fruition here, but make them older.
Yeah. When the stalking who stuffs her, she's going to be 30.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Definitely 30. Something.
Yeah.
30-something.
So moving on. Nobody told me there would be vampires.
This also made me laugh because this is all caps in the notes. All caps.
I got so excited, but I don't like Nuri. So is there a sexy boy vampire hanging around that's going to be our friend? I wouldn't mind that.
Oh, yes, there is because no.
Are you spoiling it?
No.
I wouldn't mind a sexy boy vampire.
I know one of the people he calls to help her. I think that's in this book. Pause. Where do they make it at the end of this book?
They make it to his court, the fire court. Yeah,
but they fight a bunch of vampires.
They do.
I was thinking one of the people he called to help her heal.
It was the water, the...
No, because there's...
It was someone from a different court.
It was Briar.
There's Briar, okay. But he's the water prince.
Which I was like, JK. I didn't expect Briar to be a boy name.
I was going to say, there's a couple of names, like even Sloan being a guy.
Yeah.
One of the guards.
For me.
Okay. And then finally, fuck the assassin lord. Fuck that guy. Lord. And fuck Mikael.
Mikael.
Fuck that guy.
You know... I feel like if your title is the Assassin Lord, It's just safe to say we're going to say fuck that guy because we have yet to meet an assassin lord with a heart of gold. You know what I mean? He's just a ruthless motherfucker.
I just pissed me off.
Yeah. I know one of your notes, Bridget, was like the characters or their personalities were a bit lacking. And so I thought they were okay, but I'm excited to see us develop a bit more as we kind of settle in on the second book.
Right. And I'm hoping so too, because I felt like, and this is probably because, you know, I watched that TikTok video. So that was kind of in my head, but I did feel like they were a shell of multiple characters we have read throughout different series. And they didn't have just one like fleshed out personality. It just felt like we were skimming and getting the best of or the worst of certain ones. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, but who are you? Are you your own person? So hoping that changes. Specifically Soren.
Yeah. Soren.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know what to make of this man. Mike, are you – which – like if I had to compare it to an SJM character, I feel like it's a little too early for me to make the assumptions. But there's others where I'm like, okay, you're the Kale of this group. Okay, you're the Dorian of this group. Okay, you're the –
honestly, I feel like he's closer to Castile than anything else. Like a shell of Castile.
Oh, like a dollar store Castile, I think. Oh. At least Castile had some like.
That was harsh.
It was dollar like a 50 cent store. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, I don't know. I don't think.
Why is that harsh? You liked him?
No, oh. I didn't like him. I mean, the thing is, I'm not making these connections to other series the way that you guys are.
You see it as your own entity, its own thing.
Yeah, since, and again, just remembering what I saw in that video, it seemed like this was going to be more of a literal thing. And since it's not literally that.
Oh, see, when I think the video I saw, it was more like it was plagiarizing concepts.
Which, how do you like have a copyright on a concept?
I don't know, dude.
Especially with like all these fantasy novels. So, the thing is that I've already, up until this point at least, I've already just like disregarded that comment. So I'm not really like tying them back to anybody else.
I think I just do that in general. I'm like, oh, this book is kind of similar to this one. And then I start comparing the characters. Like,
yeah. But that being said, like, the characters, they haven't fleshed out enough that I feel like any type of emotional attachment to them.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. They're a bit lacking to me. Usually in the first book, at least we have some sort of like attachment to them. Like I was not attached to Soren. I'm not attached to – what's the girl's name? I don't even know.
Scarlet.
Scarlet. Could not even tell you that was her name.
Well.
I do hate Mikhail.
Oh, yeah. We can unite in our
– I think that plot line with him, the way it unraveled, caught me off guard. So I do appreciate that because I was like –
I did too.
And I didn't know why. And now I do because you're shit. Like, not the shit. You are literally fucking shit on my foot. Like, I stepped in poop. You are the poop I stepped in.
Yeah, that was a good plot twist because I didn't see him coming in. But let's get into what happened in this book. And maybe Hilda can help us remember what was the background of what happened here.
So, just notes. Okay, so we're told that the kingdom of it's a continent across the sea, and they were defeated when they tried to overthrow King Damis and Queen Esmeralda. So in this world that we're in, there are vampires, which are called the Children of the Night, witches, shifters, fae, and humans. Not quite sure who is allied with who. I do think we get some more details in book two. I'm just going to say I'm confused by what's going on. So actually, if there's anyone that knows what's going on still within the context of book one, please hit up our DMs and explain it to us.
Yeah. So I have a question. I don't know if you can answer this. Avalea? Now I've messed it up.
Avonlayan.
Is that not what the whole continent's called?
No, that's the one across the street. Across the street. Across the sea.
No, the map literally just has an arrow and it's like, it's that way. And I'm like, okay, cool.
Oh, did it? Because I was looking at the map the other day and I was like, this place? And I couldn't tell if it was the whole continent.
We got a name for the actual continent we are on.
Okay.
It's just the world map. And so we have the divisions of like the fire court, the earth court, and then we have the water court, the shifters.
Oh, I see. To Avonlea. I think it's in book two.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, I noticed it in book two.
I don't know what the name of this continent is.
Okay. Carry on. Small interlude.
So because of this war, magic is inaccessible in the human lands. But there are workarounds. And we are reminded that there are workarounds constantly. But there's not supposed to be any magic. You know, I almost kind of appreciate that she doesn't go into specifics about what the workarounds are. She's just like, there's workarounds.
And like, everyone's like, yes, workarounds. Okay,
there's just workarounds. But what have we learned in the past couple of weeks? You can manipulate history and the stories depending on who is telling them or who the winner is. Mm-hmm. So I think that just keep that in mind. Okay, so recap. We're dumped in the middle of the story for you epic poetry nerds, kind of like in media res. I probably butchered that pronunciation. So I'm going to go out of order, but I'm going to tell you in the way that I remember it. So we meet Scarlett Monroe. Again, there's a random H in her name. If you guys ever watch Family Guy and that one episode when Stewie's like, cool whip.
Yeah, the wheat then.
The whip. So Scarlett Monroe.
Or Monroe.
Yeah, that's it too.
Sorry about the cough.
Monho.
She's living in Lord Balaam Tyndall's home, and they're in the city of Baeloran, which is in the country of Windenell, which reminds me of Windex. So Lord Tyndall basically trains the troops for the king. He has a son named Drake and a daughter named Tava, who we think are pretty cool and are not assholes, but TBD, because again, we've only read one book. So Scarlett decides that she needs to start training again, and she asks Riker, who apparently trains the king's elite guards, to help her train. And at first he's like, nope, I'm not going to do that. But they spar and they agree to train together. And he notices while he's training with her that she has a ring which is called a Samaria ring or a Samarian ring. Also, we learned that Scarlett every night needs to drink a special tonic because she has this mysterious ailment that makes her nauseated and exhausts her. And she has several episodes throughout the book to further reinforce that she needs to drink this tonic nightly. So little by little, we get the story of why Scarlett is living in exile with Lord Tyndall. And I'm just going to go ahead and explain that to you. So she's lived with her mother in the Black Syndicate, which is the criminal part of town that has its like own code of honor, and they take care of their own. And her mother was a famous healer, and people from all the realms would come see her so she could heal them. But then when Scarlett is 9 years old, her mother is killed, and she's taken along with Nuri and Juliet to live with the Lord of the Assassins. And so Nuri actually ends up becoming the Lord of the Assassins' adopted daughter, and the three of them become the Wraiths of Death. So they're highly skilled and highly trained, and they use whatever means necessary to get their missions accomplished.
Yeah, like
so
basically, evil yeah. musketeers.
Yeah, they become like the prime assassins, and it's Death's Shadow, Death's Maiden, and Death Incarnate, I think are their names.
Yeah, so Death's Shadow will follow you, Death's Maiden will make you wish you were dead, and Death Incarnate will actually finish you off.
So there are three baddies sent out on missions, whoever wants to hire them to like kill people, torture them, extract information, etc. They also grew up with Cassius, who is basically one of Scarlett's best friends slash also her bodyguard, but he's also a commander in the king's army. In this world, I guess it's possible to have multiple positions. So the girls find out that the orphans from the Black Syndicate are going missing, and they decide to investigate. And they end up having a weird interaction with some guy they followed on the docks. So they think that their best chance of getting information is to approach Crown Prince Callan. But because they are assassins, you can't just walk up to the Crown Prince without starting a war. So basically, Scarlett decides to like stalk the prince and make fun of his reading materials so she can begin a relationship with him. And they start corresponding. Eventually, the prince falls in love with her because, you know, she treats him like a regular person and not as the crown prince. And they eventually begin an affair. And so she's like sneaking into the castle. He's inviting her to masked balls. And his two guards, Finn and Sloane, are like, we are not cool with this because you're hanging out with an assassin and, you know, it's our job to protect you. Also, Caitlin corrected me and Cassius is Cassius, not Cassius.
Okay. Bridget corrected you.
Oh, Bridget corrected. Thank you. Thank you, Bridget.
Anytime. Thanks for the pronunciation guide, author.
Yeah. And I will just let you know I'm going to fuck that up constantly.
And I got like a spidey sense going on with Finn. And I was like, because they're like Finn's the guard and Scarlett have kind of this camaraderie repertoire where I'm like, you seem a little friendly, where Sloane is very standoffish and like, get out of here. You're bad for my prince.
Yeah.
Some spidey senses are going off on him.
I trust no one.
I trust zero people in this book.
So while that's going on, the son of the hand of the king, Mikhail. Lairwood wants Scarlett for himself, and he wants to make sure that his trampy sister Veda marries Callan. And so one night after Scarlett hooks up with Callan, as she's leaving the castle and she's like determined to end the relationship because like what future do they have? She's not a noble woman. She's an assassin. He's the crown prince. There's no way they could ever be together. She's kidnapped by Mikhail, who also kidnapped Nuri and Cassius and Juliet and a little orphan girl from the syndicate. I just want to make like how – I thought these were supposed to be like the deadliest, well-trained assassins. Like why are they getting kidnapped? But whatever. That's beside the point.
Yeah, that lost it a little bit for me because not only did this happen once, this happened
multiple times.
Yeah. So I'm like, I was here for the three baddies on a mission, but it almost felt like you got caught twice. Like this is – I'm losing – your street cred's going down with me.
I think
also, he supposedly is human, whereas the rest of them are all some like type of like superpower.
Right. I think by the last time when it happened, I was like, okay, now what the fuck is going on? Like, did you walk into the trap? Did you willingly say, hey, I'm here?
Right.
Especially with Nuri, I was like, but we can talk about that when we get there.
Because whatever.
I was done by this point.
So anyways, they're all kidnapped and he's basically like, you're going to be mine and you're going to end your relationship with the crown prince or your friends are going to die. And Nuri has a terrible injury to her side. Cassius got stabbed by the stupid trampy sister. And eventually, though, they're like set free. And so Scarlett, you know, agrees to whatever with Mikhail. And he takes her into a room and he assaults her. Because he, again, I think we mentioned this, he's a piece of shit. And we hate him. And fuck that guy. And whatever, after he's done assaulting her, he brings her out and I forget what happened, but he's basically like, okay, well, now he's like, you get to decide, do you kill Juliet or do you kill the little orphan girl, which fucked I forgot up. What her name is.
Tula. This was fucked up.
And so he's like, yeah, you have to kill one of them or I'm going to kill both of them as punishment. Because I think she must have like mouthed off or something because Scarlett, of course, is sassy. And so Juliet is like, you can kill me. No point in killing this little innocent girl.
It's going to be okay. It was tough. That was a tough part.
This really sucked because up until we got into this point, Scarlett apparently has refused to talk about this night. And it wasn't just that Juliet died. It's that she had to kill Juliet, which is absolutely terrible. And she's apparently going to go off with Mikhail. But then Cassius comes and like rescues her. And I think he like stabs Mikhail, but they don't fucking kill this guy. Which I didn't like, how is he still alive? How is he still alive? And how is he still like coming around?
That was the part that really annoyed me. Because it took us a good like 75 to 80% in this book to really find out what happened in this night. So when I got to that point, I started thinking about how they were interacting with him on a regular basis.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you had to sit in the face of your, the person who assaulted you and made you kill your sister, like,
and
person.
When you first meet them, of course, you know nothing. And there's obviously some animosity between them. Yeah. And, you know, you're picking up a hatred, but not more of a hatred than, like, I want to marry you and I don't want to marry you. Like, that's right. All yeah. the hatred. But this is, like, some deep-seated stuff. So this yeah. was
it, like, I get wanting to reveal later on, but all of them knew.
It felt uncharacteristic.
Drake knew. Cassius yeah. knew. And like,
because they were all like semi protecting her. So we knew in the book that they knew something was up, and we just assumed it was because like he was harassing her all the time because he wanted her to become his wife, and he would verbally say that in front of people and she'd be snarky back to him. So I thought they were just looking out for her, which I mean they were, but like there's levels of extreme here.
Yeah.
But also like they knew that she had to kill Juliet. So I still don't know. I mean, I guess plot point, but like I thought it was,
well, technically she never told them specifics. She just told them like the girl died, and she never told them anything else about that night.
I guess I don't, it's just, it was weird to me. So because of what happens that night, she ends up having a falling out with the Lord of the Assassins, because he doesn't let her get retribution for Juliet's death. And you know, he threatens her all the time with, oh wait, no, sorry. She has a falling out with the Lord of the Assassins. She doesn't get retribution for Juliet. She gets punished by the syndicate and basically exiled to Lord Tyndale's manor, which is where we are back in present day. So she's been in exile for a year when Nuri shows up and basically tells her that she has a new job from the Lord of the Assassins. And if she completes this mission, then he'll give her the information about who killed her mother, or like all the details. But we know that it was, whatchamacallit, the Fae Fire Prince who ended up killing her mother, or is responsible for her mother's death. So anyways, while she's thinking of this, and the Lord of the Assassins won't tell her why she has to kill this mark, just that that is her mark, and it kind of goes against her code of ethics as an assassin. Kind of like, why do I have to kill this person? She wants to know, why is this person the scum of the earth and why am I going after them?
I appreciate code of ethics among yeah. my assassins.
But the Lord of the Assassins basically like, you just need to do what I need you to do.
Right, just do what I tell you to do.
So anyways, she is training with Riker, and she's kind of attracted to Riker, and there's some like tension between them. But she also doesn't trust him. So she follows him out of the cath, or out of Lord Tyndale's manor one day, and she finds that he's meeting in the woods with a fae who wants him to go back home and asks him why he's taking so long to track down the weapon. And so she ends up finding out that his real name is Soren and he's fae. And she decides to keep his secret, and little by little they get closer. He starts calling her love. She's like, don't call me that. He tells her about fae twin flames and his backstory, where he served the Western Fae Queen who ended up going missing, and how at some point in his life he made a bad call and he was responsible for someone's death. And he realizes at some point that she's Fae, even though she has been trained to kill Fae, and it fucking takes him forever to tell her that she's Fae, which was really annoying.
And he had so many opportunities, he just diddly-daddled around.
He was kind of like, well, I have my assumptions, but I'm not 100% sure, so I don't want to say anything, which I thought was really stupid.
Yeah, it was a little annoying. I'm like, I think I'm assuming what you're assuming. Let's hope we're assuming the same thing. And I just want to quickly talk a little bit about the different kinds of bonds that they established in here, because I thought this was pretty interesting. So you have your twin flame, which, I mean, at this point, I haven't read a book that's got like an actual twin flame in them. So I thought that was a cool use of something besides a mating bond.
Or a soulmate.
Right. Well, yes. So you had your twin flame, which I really thought was an interesting approach. But then you also have your soulmate, which is
not romantic.
Not romantic at all. And it's almost like you're, to go from Zodiac Academy, your nebula ally, I guess. This person who's kind of got your back, and it can be another, it can be like a male and a female. And it's yeah, just,
and they understand you and they accept you.
And they're still pretty loving toward each other. Like, it's not like they're not, I mean, they're hugging all the time. They're constantly touching, but they're just.
They're not lovers.
Strictly platonic. Yeah. It's like my soul accepts your soul.
Platonic besties. I like it.
Yeah. And I just thought that was a really, I liked that approach.
Okay. So anyways, she again hasn't killed her latest mark. The Lord of the Assassins calls her in for like discipline and he like slaps her around and like treats her like shit and threatens her with handing over to Mikhail as his wife. And again, he's just basically like, don't question me. Just like go kill this person. So children start going missing again and they resume the investigation into why they're going missing, which means she has to go back to Callan. So since that night when Juliet died and she ended her relationship with Callan, she has not seen him. So she enters the castle. They immediately hook up. And because this happened before we got the full story, I didn't understand her like emotional breakdown over this, but ultimately she feels bad because she does care about Callan and she feels like she's using him, which she is, but she's also doing it for a good reason, which is we need to find out where these missing children are. So I thought that was like the emotional outburst that she had over this, I thought was just kind of like shitty because she gets mad at Nuri for making her go and see Callan, but like she got laid and she liked it.
I don't know. I thought it was justifiable. I was like, that's really fucked up. Like, she took one for the team, but it ended up putting her back into a dark hole. We didn't know exactly what was the dark hole, but it was bad.
I can see how, again, she felt bad. She's like, oh, I got to go do this. I'm going to lead this person on. Like, I like it and I like them, but this is going to lead them on. I'm going to feel guilty about it. But the level of reaction she had initially to having to done this, it would have been like, you're sending her to Mikhail all over again. Like, I expected Callan to have some, like, dark twist. She was like, I cannot go over there. And it was – and maybe that's just from years of reading romance where you've got these villains that are always doing something terrible to our main lead somehow. But I expected her to have that kind of reaction for someone who has physically harmed her versus someone who actually loves her.
Yeah, like, it was – I get that you would feel bad, but it was just very – I don't know. It felt a little bit like a temper tantrum-y.
Well, she's 19.
I guess. So Callan, you know, agrees to do some investigating and he comes over to Soren's apartment, which is now the designated meeting spot, because again, she cannot be seen at the castle approaching Callan or it'd be like really bad because everyone knows that she's Death's maiden. And so Callan speaks with Scarlet and he tells her that Soren, as the general who is training the elite forces, is the person responsible for the missing children. And Scarlet fucking loses her mind and she's gonna beat the shit out of Soren, even though 5 minutes before she had been making out with Soren. Because again, they have like a thing, they have tension, they like to make out. And he's basically like, yeah, no, that's, I have no idea what these people do when I'm not training them and I have never sent them on a mission. I am absolutely innocent. And also, hey, by the way, you're Fae. Pretty sure that's when this happens. And so she's like, okay, well, I'm going to take you to the Black Syndicate tomorrow and show you around and to prove that you've never been there before and you're not the one stealing the children. So she takes him. Lo and behold, he's not the one that's been kidnapping the children. But when they're there, they're confronted by the Lord of the Assassins, who really beats her up this time and not just slaps her around. And he threatens Soren with black ashwood arrows. And again, because she has not killed that he assigned to her.
I wanted to get your thoughts on when she was bringing him to the Black Syndicate. Because she was like, I don't want to bring you there. Like, you tell me right now if you're involved. Because if I bring you there and you are involved, like, it's going to get bad. So I thought we were going before, like, a grand council to be like, has this man been coming through? So I expected some grand inquiry where he'd be held on trial in front of the Black Syndicate, not like a, hey, come meet our preschool where all the kids are, the playground. I did not expect like a hang out with the kids day. Also don't know if that was the strongest maneuver to like bring, if you suspected this man of stealing children, why are you going to bring him around children again? Thing. Like that's traumatic as hell.
I think that she took him, but I think by the time that she took him, she already knew that he wasn't the one responsible. because I remember that she was like, that look on his face when I accused him, that was a genuine look of like confusion.
Right.
So it was more like, I'm going to take you to verify, but maybe you also see.
Yeah, I think it was her like way of showing him how important the cause was to her. Mm-hmm. And like, because when she confronted him about it, obviously he was confused and stuff like that. But she had mentioned some other things to him and she was like, okay, in her head, there's no way he could have done that because he seemed truly shocked by some of the things that she was saying. Everyone was being played in this book by Mikhail.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, while she gets beat up, they go back to Soren's apartment. They have almost sexy time.
So close.
But they don't. But anyways, Tava shows up in the morning, totally frantic. And she's like, you've been summoned to the estate. And you need to meet with my father. So Scarlett goes and she actually runs into Mikhail. And he's like, oh, by the way, the Lord of the Assassins gave you to me. So we're going to get married. And because we're going to get married so quickly and you want to be really involved in the wedding planning, you get to come live with me at my estate. So he takes her to the Lairwood estate, which is his father's estate. His father is not thrilled about this union, but Mikhail's a dick and he's forcing it. And he takes her and he basically imprisons her in a tower and he forces her to drink her tonic. By this point, he reveals that he knows that she's Fae, hence why he's making her drink her tonic. And he's basically like holding her prisoner. And she's kind of in a semi-catatonic state because, you know, she's back to being a prisoner. Throughout the entire book, you know, she's like, I'm tired of being in a cage and other people making decisions for me. Part of the reason why she will not commit to Callan is because she doesn't want to be a queen, because she feels like that would be a different type of cage than when she's currently in. So anyways, she's being held prisoner. Soren's like, I need to go rescue her and then get the fuck out of the human lands and get back to my fae court. And he hatches together a plan with Cassius and Nuri to make sure that the children are protected so Mikhail can't go after them. He also, we find out that if anything goes wrong, Mikhail will make it seem like Cassius was going to attempt to kill the crown prince. So they have to loop in Callan into this rescue effort and basically bring him along so that he can also like go into hiding so that Mikhail can't hatch his dastardly plot against Callan.
Like, Mikhail, how? Like,
how powerful is the hand of the king?
Right?
Is this Game of Thrones?
It was starting to feel a little bit like it with how much he was able to maneuver and manipulate people.
And how much information he had and how he's also somehow infiltrated the Black Syndicate, which is renowned for just its secrecy.
But it also made me think that, I mean, his father, no, I'm sorry. He has to be working with Lord Tyndall, because then we find out that Lord Tyndall is like in on this and is also in on it with the Lord of the Assassins. I bet you the Lord of the Assassins is actually her father.
Oh, you think so?
I had thought so at some point, because why else would she, the mom, move into an area like that and raise her in that area?
I assumed because she knew what she was and she knew what a threat she could be, so she needed to, or like what threats would be against her. So she's like, I gotta find the most powerful people that have a clan of people to protect her, and I need her to train so she's able to fight one day for herself. That was my assumption.
But these are evil people that prefer power.
Right. So maybe she's like, I'll be your mistress? I don't know. There's something.
Yeah, no.
Because they specifically call Nuri her dad, even though I think it's established that he is not her biological daughter.
He is not her biological daughter.
But none of the other girls, the Maiden or Death Incarnate, are referred to as his daughters either.
But did you catch the part where Nuri would – when he dies, Nuri will only inherit his wealth?
Right.
Scarlet will inherit the position.
Correct.
So I thought that that was very interesting. Anyways, long story short, we don't know who Scarlett's dad is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Another game of who's your daddy?
A game we love to play.
We do love playing that game. So anyways, Soren launches the rescue effort. While they're escaping the manor, they get caught. Oh, wait. Before this, while Soren is putting together the plan, he sends a message via Phoenix, because apparently he can, like, communicate with Phoenix as his spirit animal, to bring him his general, Eliza. And so Eliza comes, and he's like, hey, I need you to do this thing and, like, give me this mark. And she's like, Cyrus is going to kill you. And he's like, that's cool. I'm pulling rank. I need you to give me this mark. So while he doesn't specifically say it, I think we are supposed to be connecting the dots that Soren and Scarlett are actually twin flames, and he begins the twin flame recognition process so that he can get to her. But he hasn't told her any of this because the man just loves to withhold relevant information. So, of course, this will lead to conflict later on, which will probably end up leading to really good sexy time when they either, like, hate fuck it out or...
One can only hope.
Love fuck it out.
Real quick question. Did we talk about how the fact she became Lady of Darkness while she was being captured or being held prisoner by Mikhail?
No, because I don't know what Lady of Darkness is. So at some point, she's, like, embracing her magic is coming out and expressing itself.
Do we talk about the dreams?
And it's coming out of shadows. We have not talked about
the dreams. Okay, so at the beginning of the book, she starts having these dreams of this, like, man, and he has
this beautiful, like, man.
Beautiful man with silver hair. So I thought this was going to be, like,
her father.
That's what I thought.
Oh, really? I thought it was supposed to be, like, someone she was in love with, or, like, that's going to be her twin
flame. I initially thought it was, like, some beautiful man that she's in love with. But then I was getting... Like, with the silver hair, I'm like, no, hey, once you're familial at that point.
Yeah, once they said silver hair, I was like, this must be her father.
Right. So as it continued to progress, you know, I was suddenly assuming it was not a love interest and it was someone else that was important. And then, you know, we start playing the game of who's your daddy. But she continuously has these dreams. And then throughout the book, they just stop talking about it. And then it comes back into play at the end of the book. And during one of the dreams, while she was sleeping, right before she went to bed, she got injured and he healed her in the dream. And so the next day, Soren was like, how did you heal so quickly? And she goes, I was healed in my dream. And she kind of just brushed it off. So when she's finally in this kind of last act with Mikhail staying in the dungeons because he's going to marry her and stuff like that, she is so depressed. She kind of just withdraws into herself, and something basically happens in the dream when he tells her to, like, rise as Lady of Darkness is what you are. And so now when she wakes up, her powers have manifested and she has, like, shadows lingering around her body and kind of just moving all around. And
sentient shadows.
Yeah, they're sentient. So, like, they respond without her saying or doing anything.
Not to be confused with sentient flesh ribbons, by the way.
I also was thinking flesh ribbons. Quick callback to another book we've read.
I don't know. Because we did find out that her fire, it burns. But he also, like, Soren had mentioned that it was interesting that, like, her powers manifested in the form of shadow as well. So, like, where is she getting additional power from? Because it's not from one of the...
She has fire and water magic. And because of water, she can therefore have ice.
But where's shadow coming from?
No, nobody knows. Nobody knows yet. At least we don't know yet. Maybe we'll know in book 2. So anyways, they go through the rescue effort. They get trapped in the cellar. That's when Lord Tyndall shows up and basically says he's been in on it the entire time about, like, who she is. And Mikhail seems to know too, like, who she is, not just Death's Maiden, but a fey princess. And so Soren does this thing where he joins their bloody palms and they're able to teleport out. Anyways, they meet at the beach with everyone who's been waiting for them there. She's, like, lost a lot of energy or she's, like, losing control of her magic, but she can't really get healed or get control of her magic while she's in the human realms because she doesn't know the workaround that apparently Soren knows so that he can manipulate magic. So anyways, they start fleeing.
Isn't it her ring?
So she can't, because she doesn't know how to use her magic, she can't use the ring to like control herself. But also remember, she's always been able to like access her magic even when she's not wearing the ring.
Right.
Because she's so powerful. Again, not quite sure what the mechanisms are. Anyways, they're fleeing to the border. Cassius and Neri stay behind to protect the orphans. Although I don't know what those two are going to be protecting since they always get fucking caught. But whatever.
LOL.
Not our problem anymore.
Their superpowers nullify if they're together. Yeah. They're just
dum-dums.
Yep.
So Soren, Eliza, Scarlet, plus Callan, Finn, and Sloane are racing to the border. And Callan is trying to be protective of Scarlet. But at this point, Scarlet's basically like, no, dude, I'm with Soren. I like to tell him that I hate him to his face, but then I usually kiss him after I say that. And I know that I'm safer when I'm with this dude, so I'm just going to ride the horse with him. So anyways, they're fleeing to the border. At one point, she walks away. She feels like she's being watched. But then Soren shows up. They have a really hot makeout scene against a tree, which again, it happened after a day and a half of travel. So they were probably stinky and whatever. You guys know how I feel about musky forest hookups.
A musky and a musty hookup.
I just know how I feel about swamp ass. So anyways, as they are getting to the border, they get attacked by Children of the Night, who apparently are still allied with humans. So the vibe that I was getting towards the end of the book, it was the humans who were kind of evil and the Fae have been maligned. But again, still don't have a full story. Anyways, she gets stabbed with a Shira Stone Dagger, which is, I guess, the weapon that can kill Fae and anything. And Soren goes nuts and he takes her to the Fire Court. I don't know if I said this already, but I'm going to say it now. If you haven't connected the dots or if I haven't mentioned it, Soren is the Fire Prince, famous Fire Prince.
I connected right away.
So did I.
Me too.
Maybe because like, Scarlet's only...
I won't
only,
let the prince take you.
Like, right. Maybe because Scarlet's only 19, she didn't connect the dots. But she apparently didn't realize this. So we get to the Fire Court. Soren's going nuts. He's getting the healer. He's getting his friends to, like, take care of her. And they keep saying, like, the prince, the prince, the prince. And finally, Scarlet realizes the prince that they're referring to is Soren and that he is the Fire Prince. And she basically goes nuts. No, this is the part. How am I forgetting what happened here? She finds out.
I forgot too, so I don't know. I was waiting for you.
She finds out she needs to get healed. But she's basically like, I hate you. You've been lying to me this entire time. And he's like, no, honey, it's going to be okay. I'm never going to hurt you.
But also, like, he's done that a couple times. He's like, no, I told you all the things except for this one thing.
Except for this thing. Yeah.
But now that's everything. Oh, hold on. There's one more other thing. And now we all know, because we all saw them get the mark, we know that there's another thing that she's hiding.
He's definitely guilty of lying by omission.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Also, I would say that he's guilty of not being able to read the room. Sir, just fucking tell her.
Right.
So is Soren going to make the why choose list?
Fuck no. Hell no.
I don't feel like he is.
We don't have room for dumb boys.
No.
No.
We'll see if he can redeem himself.
We'll see. And so that's basically how it ends.
Dun, 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 dun. Lady of Darkness, which in my head I kept singing, Lady in Red.
Darkness.
Yeah, it didn't flow.
Wait, did we say that he worked with the mom?
Oh, yeah. He intimately knew her mom. Boom. Other spoiler alert of things he did not tell her.
He was her mom's
soulmate.
Soulmate.
Which is because
in the way they describe it. Go ahead and say it's like creepy.
Yeah.
No, not creepy. Well, if you think about it in the context, but because he was always jealous of her relationship with Cassius, but then he realized that her and Cassius are soulmates and it's platonic. The way she grew up or he was with her mom. So age gap romance, I guess.
I mean, definitely. But it just, I don't, and just, it's weird.
All right, let's get into our ratings and reviews. I'll start us off and say, I really liked it. I liked it. Again, I think I vibed with it because I vibed with her source material of where it's based off of. But I found it easy to read. At no point was I like, dear God, this is dragging on. And I don't know if that's because I did the Audible for this one, which is a little bit different of a reading experience for me. But I liked it.
I'll give it a 3. I'm going to continue reading. I'm intrigued. I do not like the things, you know, that we have discussed that it was annoying me. But here we are.
Yes, I didn't say it, but I gave it a 3.5.
I'm stuck between a 3.75 and a 4.
Okay.
It's good, but not great. I don't love the characters, and I don't understand what's going on, but I do want to know what happens. So, and not in a, well, I started this, I have to finish it.
Right.
But like, I genuinely want to know what happened.
Oh, 100%.
So I am intrigued, and I'm hoping there is a hot, cute vampire boy that I can add to Hilda's vampire harem, which she's like slowly collecting. Which is only so far at Lance or Ryan, though, because I kicked Castiel out.
Well, you know.
That's okay. That's understandable.
It's your choose. You could choose whoever you want to be there. Your choice. It is worth noting that this is a completed series, and I believe it is 5 books. So it subscribes to Hilda's ideal number of books in a series, that they must be odd. So a win on all fronts for our end. It's not something that will be extended indefinitely. Excited to see as we continue to go through this again. And special thanks to our friends Sierra, Lakeisha, and Corey, who all recommended this to us. And thank you to our friend Renee with your insight into why we really got to jump on this.
Woohoo, Renee.
Yes. Also want to shout out Callie for recommending Draco Malfoy and the Mortifying Ordeal of Being in Love by This Is Self-Care.
Is this self-care?
Oh, you have by. Is this phone? You say that one. You read that one, right?
Yeah, okay. I read that one. That one got me out of the manacled dark slump.
The manacled funk?
Yeah. It was very British. It was very British.
So that was worth it. Draco Malfoy and the Mortifying Ordeal of Being in Love, which sounds cute. It's very like Mr. Darcy Bridgerton-y kind of.
It was very, if you ever actually read Bridget Jones's diary books, it reminded me of that.
Oh.
It was slow though. It took like a long time for them to hook up, but it was worth it.
Awesome. So if you guys have any other book recommendations or thoughts and feelings on this book in particular, you can always slide onto our DMs at booktalkmademe_pod. Where one of us, most likely Hilda, will be able to answer your questions and relay to us your thoughts and feelings there. I do want to give a quick shout out to our Patreon. If you're not subscribing, now's the time, friends. What are we waiting for? We are about to launch a series called Things We're Not Done Talking About for one of our membership levels, where we are sharing some additional thoughts and feelings. Maybe it didn't make it into the episode. Maybe we can't stop thinking about it. Days later, for example, I just saw an unhinged theory that I feel like it is unhinged. Are we a little damaged from the last round of unhinged things we did that didn't come to fruition? Maybe, but I still want to talk about this. So that's why you can get access to our Things We Still Want to Talk About series, which will be launching on our Patreon shortly. So make sure to jump on and subscribe. And of course, thank you to everyone who's already done so. We immensely appreciate your support. So it's that time of the program where we get into our Spotify questions of the week. So some of these contain spoilers of plot points. Want to go ahead and warn you now that we're looking at plot points and discussions in the – we're looking at plot points and discussions from questions in the A Court of Mist and Fury series from Sarah J. Maas, Dark Olympus, House of Flame and Shadow, and Manacled. So if you haven't read those books and don't want to be accidentally spoiled, we'll catch you later, friend. Dip out. But if you are here to hear these thoughts and feelings, well, then come along. Let's get into it. So from A Court of Mist and Fury, the question was, after this book, do you think Tamlin deserves a redemption arc? Rincal Pramar said, no, 2 exclamation points. Not at all. Team redemption arc, and I'll say what I said. But I appreciate you saying what you said. Thank you, Rincal. this is from the Midnight Ruin series. This is from Dark Olympus. The book is Midnight Ruin. And the question was, are you reading the Dark Olympus series and should we keep covering it? Because, again, this is book 6. Claudia said, I gave up after Wicked Beauty. I'm not Katie Roberts' target audience, and I'm a teensy bit interested to hear how the overarching story unfolds, so I'm living vicariously through you guys.
I get that because I just really want to know who Hermes is with, and then I want the storyline for Zeus and Hera. That's it. I don't want anything else.
Me either. And I just feel like it's like we're getting all these appetizers and we haven't gotten to the main course.
We'll take one for the team for you, Claudia.
Yes. We will keep our journalistic integrity and we'll keep going and reporting on this.
Because the smut's pretty good.
It's the smut smutting. Yeah. I know. So same question. Are you reading the series and should we keep covering it? Dana Liu said, I am not reading it. It makes no sense to me that they are gods with no other power than money. I didn't care for the public scenes in Neon Gods and stopped reading after that book. You know, that part always bothered me too a little bit. I think we started to explore when we first got into it. We're like, they're gods, but they're not gods. There's power, but there's no power. Like, there's magic, but no one has magic.
You know, when we started it thinking it was like a fantasy series and we were questioning everything, and then we were like, oh, this is at face value. Like, yeah, we're not here for
it's complex situations. No, there's other things that we want to know how deep they're getting, but that's not one of them. So from House and Flame and Shadow, the question was, do you want to share any final thoughts on Hofas? Anne Moore said, there was no need to bring all my brain cells into this book. Only two would have sufficed. Deep diving into fan theories and possible plot points was unnecessary. Still a fan, though.
I felt that. I felt like we did majority of the work for her. It was so bad.
Oh, my gosh. I know.
I think I had more of like a mental hangover from doing all the like the deep dives, plots, fan theories, and actually reading the book. I was like, the book was not that deep.
But you know what? We expected it to be. To be fair, I think everyone expected there to be more there. Our next question from what do you think about House of Flame and Shadow so far? That was from our reactions where we had only gotten to a certain part. Ellie72 said, I am at 35% in the book and just thought parts of it was like chewing sand and blood.
What?
That's a description. Bryce is kind of awful and selfish. 100%.
Uh-huh.
And everybody's suffering. I usually love SJM's book, but this is hard with crying emojis.
It was definitely really hard.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. So now we're getting into Manacled. Have you read Manacled, and do you have any advice on how to survive it? Steph said, I won't read this because the topic's too heavy for me, but oh my God, so glad you guys covered it so I can feel like I can read it without the emotional trauma. Thank you, guys. Little heart.
Glad to take one for the team.
Let me tell you, the unexpected weeping that hit me, I was like, I didn't feel anything. Then I'm like, oh, God. Women's rights are so overlooked and suppressed.
Yeah.
Women's contributions to society, I should say, are so overlooked. That really just got me in my heartstrings. Claudia answered the same question. Have you read Manacled and do you have any advice on how to survive it? She said, I have not and will not read this. I understand some people love fanfic, but it's not for me, especially when it takes a dark turn. Thanks for recapping it so I can be in the know without reading it. I say, our pleasure.
Always gladly do that for you guys.
Happy to serve. And the same question relating to Manacled, Taylor answered, Manacled was the darkest book I have ever read. It took me 2 weeks to read and a month reading book break after. I'm a huge Harry Potter fangirl, so this one hit me hard.
I felt that. Like, I understand.
Yeah. Really understand that.
Yeah, and I was in the middle of reading Harry Potter to my kids. So I was like, this is a weird mental shift to go back and forth between. So those are all our Spotify questions of the week. You can go back to answer those questions or any questions from any episode past. Can you believe we have 86 of them? 86 episodes at this point.
Wow.
Right? Wild. So we've got 86 Spotify questions of the week. You can go back and answer and we'll talk about them here on the episode recording. So what do we got next? You're wondering, what are we reading next? Well, of course, we like to go in sequential order. So we're going to give you Lady of Shadows, which is book two in, I guess it's the Lady of Darkness series.
Okay.
I'm like, is this one of those ones where we have a third tertiary name that we're just like calling?
She kept it simple for us.
I appreciate that. Bless. So we'll be covering that book next. And if you're wondering what comes after that, the order is Lady of Darkness, which we just covered, Lady of Shadows that we're covering next. And then following that is Lady of Ashes, Lady of Embers, and Lady of Starfire. It's like those titles are like a progression of Our Lady. Can't wait to see what unfolds. Again, you can find us at booktalkmimi_pod and give us a like, a follow, and shoot us a DM to say hey. And Hilda will probably say hey back.
Let's be real. Yeah, it's right. Probably Hilda.
Probably Hilda. All right, guys, that is it from us tonight, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.
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 Bye.